Okay, welcome to Bright Videos News for Friday, July 17th, 2027, or 26, sorry. Getting ahead of myself. I was just writing about famine in 2027, which is coming. But we're not there yet. So anyway, it's July 17th, 2026. Okay, so Trump just gave a speech last night where he blamed China for election fraud. And he said China had stolen a lot of hundreds of millions of election, records of voters and other various shenanigans. The thing is, almost no one is buying this story. I'm not, not to say that China didn't probably steal some number of voter records. However, the real election theft happened right here in America, especially in 2020. So that election theft was carried out by Americans, Democrats, blue cities, blue counties, blue states. They rigged it by simply rerunning the same ballots over and over and over again. Remember the suitcases full of ballots? They stuff them back in the machines. They did it by closing down or faking like there's a water leak to close down the vote counting in a center. What was that? Atlanta that did that, I think. And then they said that everybody should go home at, you know, 3 or 4 in the morning. Everybody went home, and then that's when they ran all the Joe Biden ballots. They cheated by mailing out who knows how many tens of millions of ballots, just flooding the mail so that anybody could just then go fetch those and fill it out for Joe Biden, because there's no tracking on the ballots. There's no serial numbers at all. There's nothing to avoid having ballots counted more than once, which is insane. I mean, you have serial numbers on a dollar bill in America. You don't even have serial numbers on ballots. You don't know how many times each ballot was scanned. It's insane. And then there was a massive nationwide cover-up. I'm talking about the 2020 election, which Trump won. Again, even though I've been extremely critical of Trump lately, there's no question that Trump won the vote in 2020. It was stolen from him. And there were even well-funded efforts, like Mark Zuckerberg donated hundreds of millions of dollars to make sure that some of the northern states, you know, Michigan, I think, was one of them, Pennsylvania, would steal the election. It was funded. It was stolen. It was done. And Trump didn't talk about that. He said, no, it's China, which means, of course, there's going to be no arrests of the treasonous vote fraudsters in America. There's not going to be any demand for paper ballots, which is the only real solution here. Trump didn't call for paper ballots. At least I didn't hear him call for it. I watched most of the speech. No paper ballots. It's going to be black box voting machines. Yet again, still. Which means, of course, that Trump just wants it stolen by his party instead of the other party. We're never going to have honest elections as long as there's voting machines. Now, it's pretty simple to have fast and fair elections. It's pretty simple. Now, let me give you an example. When I lived in Ecuador, I couldn't vote in Ecuador. I had a driver's license there. I had residency, but I couldn't vote. And of course, I didn't try to vote. I wasn't trying to break the local law and vote. Instead, I observed other people voting, just sort of watching, like, hey, how are elections carried out in this South American nation? And it turns out there were paper ballots. They had all the ballots counted in one evening, and everybody had to show ID. Everybody. Because the Ecuadorian people don't want, you know, Colombians coming in and voting, or foreigners like me coming in and voting, right? It was very simple. Paper ballots, you count them all in one night. There's no mail-in ballots. This is nonsense. There's no machines that are connected to the internet with images and, you know, hard drives. It's paper ballots, count them in one night, and everybody shows an ID to vote. Very simple. If you do those three things, then you have honest elections. If you don't do those three things, you don't have honest elections. And Trump isn't calling for all three of those things. He's calling for one, which is the voter ID. So, you know, that's a step in the right direction, you could say, one out of three. But you got to get rid of the of the machines. Because one of the things that Trump said is that Homeland Security, he's directed Homeland Security to tell all the states to remove ineligible voters from their voter rolls. Well, that wouldn't be a problem if you had paper ballots and people had to show ID and the election was held all in one day, because only people who showed up with a proper ID could vote. Wouldn't matter who, what ineligible voters are on the rolls, they wouldn't be able to vote anyway. The only reason those sort of ghost voters exist in the databases in California, Oregon, and Colorado, and Illinois, etc., is so that dynamically those ghosts can be made to vote to swing the election in the favor of Democrats. And, you know, unfortunately, it looks to me like instead of resolving this issue, Trump just wants to rig it in favor of the GOP, which is not okay with me. I just want honest elections, truly honest elections. Until we have paper ballots, we don't have it. And furthermore, where are the prosecutions of all the traitors who rigged the 2020 election? Huh? Where are those prosecutions? You could say, well, it's been too long. You know, you can't prosecute them, right? Statute of limitations. Well, you could name them. You could identify them. You could tell the story of what happened, even if you couldn't prosecute them in the court of law. I mean, and this idea that you can't prosecute those people in 2020 and they're just going to just come back and rig everything again in 2026 and 2028. I'm sorry, that's absurd, because being involved in large-scale election rigging, in my mind, and I'm not talking about just one person who voted twice or something, I'm talking about being involved in like industrial scale, massive, you know, ballot counterfeiting and rigging and ballot stuffing like a mule and all this, that is treason. In my view, that's treason against your country. And although I don't believe in the death sentence because I don't trust government and I don't trust the judicial process, but if I did trust the judicial process, I would be calling for the death sentence for people who are engaged in large-scale industrial vote rigging, because it's that damaging to society. However, like I said, I don't trust the judicial system. I don't trust the government, so I'm not calling for that. But the fact that I would call for that, theoretically, is a description of how serious I think this infraction is against our constitutional republic. There's no excuse for people to be involved in large-scale election rigging, ballot stuffing, mail-in ballot fraud, running ballots multiple times, etc. And by the way, if you have machines that count the ballots, you have to serialize those ballots. You have to. And you have to have the data be publicly available. Remember when all the judges after 2020 said, nope, no one can see the voting records? That's completely illegal to hide the voting records from the public. And they threw Tina Peters in prison, for God's sake. She only recently got out after they destroyed her life. That was in Colorado. She was simply trying to preserve the election records, which was part of her job. Now, in my view, Trump blaming China is a distraction. China is not the source of the rigged 2020 election. Trump knows that. Come on. It's the Democrats. It's people like Mark Zuckerberg. You know, it's, in fact, part of the, you know, COVID, the COVID pandemic and releasing that during Trump's last year, because it was an engineered bioweapon that then got put into the vaccines, you know, a year later, etc. But running the pandemic bio false flag operation against Trump in his last year, that itself was a form of election rigging. And guess who was behind that? People like, in my view, Fauci. And yet that guy walks, you know, totally free to this day, has never been prosecuted. And a lot of other people who I believe, were involved in that as well. And as you may recall, it was the COVID pandemic that then justified all the mail-in ballots, which justified mailing out the tens of millions of ballots all over town so that the ballot stuffing mules could run around town and scrape up all the ballots from nursing homes and, you know, mail drop box locations where there were like 500 ballots mailed to the same address and things like that. And then they would take those ballots and stuff them into the machines. And if that didn't win the election, they would just run the same ballots a second time or a third time or a fourth time in the middle of the night. That's why you woke up the next day. You're like, what? Trump lost? Biden won? What? Because when we went to sleep the night of the election, we all knew Trump had won. They rigged it. They changed it in the middle of the night. And I don't see Trump calling that out. Do you? No. So again, Trump is right about the fact that our elections are rigged. He's wrong about who's rigging them. For some reason, he's not willing to blame the Democrats and the, you know, the tech gurus, the billionaires who rigged it. Instead, he invites them over to the White House to have a, you know, red carpet VIP dinner. I mean, Google rigged the election. Also, Google played a role in suppressing voting among conservatives while showing messages to liberals to get out and vote. And that was based on your search history and the websites that you visit. I mean, Zach Voorhees has talked about that. He documented it. I mean, or he was working with a group that documented it. So Google was election rigging, and now Trump and Google are, you know, best friends. Same thing with Meta, Facebook, Zuckerberg, Bill Gates, you know, all of them. So again, it's so frustrating that Trump can't tell the whole truth on anything. He starts out with a little bit of truth. Yeah, the elections are rigged. And then he's like, but it's China, he says. China. Never heard somebody turn the word China into like three syllables. China, you know. It's not China, dude. It's the Democrats right here at home, and they're going to do it again. Trump knows it. Okay, so this is all smoke and mirrors. You know, there's so much bullshit coming out of the White House, I can't believe we're running into a fertilizer shortage right now. It's that bad. There was a great summary of all this from Evan Kilgore on X. He said, "Dear Donald Trump, I'm tired of hearing the 2020 election was stolen and nothing being done. Start arresting and firing the deep state. Hold the country's responsible accountable. Otherwise, shut the hell up about election interference. Signed, the American people." So that's pretty much the sentiment. So Trump, if you're going to say the election was stolen, arrest the people, prosecute the people, or at least name the people, expose the ones who stole it, and get rid of the electronic voting machines nationwide. Paper ballots that we can see, that we can audit, that are stored in a room for, you know, 2 years minimum, so we could go back and recount them. Paper ballots that can't be messed with, that aren't connected to the internet, that can't be hacked. In fact, if you think China and cybersecurity is the problem, paper is the most secure method of voting. Paper. You can't hack paper from overseas. You can't hack paper through the internet. You want secure elections? Use freaking paper. Very simple. Now, here's one other effect of all of this, by the way. Since the 2020 election was stolen, Joe Biden was never president. That's a fact. I mean, he was never a legitimate president, okay? So that means that every law that Joe Biden signed is null and void. In addition, every Supreme Court justice that Joe Biden appointed and every federal judge that he appointed needs to be removed. And if Trump is serious about doing something about election fraud, then he should present all the evidence of what happened in America. It's not China. It's stuff that happened in Atlanta. You know, it's stuff that happened in, Michigan and these other swing states, Arizona, right? Maricopa County, for God's sake, right? Show all the evidence, go to a court, present the case, and ask the court to declare the Joe Biden presidency completely null and void. Roll all that shit back. Because none of it was legitimate. None of the executive orders that Joe Biden signed were legitimate. Roll it all back. That would also mean that technically Trump was president during that entire time, which would mean that Trump is already serving his third term, although he was blocked for the second term. Oh, and by the way, that's why they had Joe Biden in a fake White House set. They filmed him in a fake Oval Office, you know, with fake windows. It was a movie set. We've all seen those images. Joe Biden was rarely in the actual White House. Everything was rigged. It was all staged the whole time. It wasn't even a real presidency. So we should roll that back. And if you're not going to try to roll it back, Trump, then, you know, shut the hell up about election fraud. Because either you're going to try to right the wrong or stop wasting our time. Okay, arrest the traitors, arrest the vote riggers, roll back the fake presidency of Joe Biden, set the record straight, and remove the freaking voting machines. Then we're talking. That's something I could get behind. I might even start participating in elections again if there's paper ballots, but as it stands right now, I can hardly even motivate myself to go vote for anything, given that, you know, still electronic voting machines, it's all fake. But I do feel like the only reason I should go vote is to vote against Ted Cruz, because he's the worst possible senator for the state of Texas imaginable. He's just another, you know, prostitute for Israel, let's be honest. You know, he's another Lindsey Graham. He's like the Texas Lindsey, except not as gay. So I don't even know who's running against Ted Cruz. And it doesn't even really matter at this point. I mean, Ted Cruz is so bad that you just like, just get him out of there. And by the way, it was the Democrats in a Senate vote, I believe it was just recently, that saved us temporarily from having the entire U.S. military turned over to Israel. That was that was led by Senator Bernie Sanders. So, you know, occasionally Bernie Sanders pulls out a win, and that was a big deal. So we have to remember that Democrats in the Senate actually sometimes serve a positive purpose, which is blocking the total insanity of the GOP. So I'm going to probably go vote against Senator Ted Cruz. I don't even know who's running against him. Doesn't even matter. I mean, if I show up to vote and it says that the Democrat candidate running against Ted Cruz is Daffy freaking Duck, I'm voting for Daffy Duck, man. I'm done with Ted Cruz. So I'm not going out to vote for anybody. I'm going out to vote against the traitors. If I vote at all, we'll see. See what happens between now and then. By the way, I was doing a recording yesterday. I was interviewing Andy Schechtman. And then out of the blue, RT contacts my producer, like, hey, we got to have Mike on. So this is breaking news. And my producer talked to him like, what's up? They said Russia and China and I think 28 countries just signed an international AI cooperative that bypasses the U.S. and Western countries to, you know, share knowledge and information about not just AI, but also semiconductors, you know, microchip creation. So they wanted to have me on. And they said it's going to be a short hit, just a few minutes. But they really wanted me on to comment about it. So I had to quickly move a couple of things around in my interview schedule. But I was able to make it work. So they sent us the video. It's pretty short, but I'd like to play it for you here. This was my little segment on RT talking about the new AI cooperative, which I fully support because I support open source AI models. And I think the U.S. government is pushing nothing but censorship and restrictions of models. And also the U.S. government is weaponizing AI as weapon systems against humanity, you know, to build autonomous Terminator killbots and things like that. So I actually support decentralization of AI technology, which right now means, you know, China, Russia, other countries as well. So anyway, I'm going to play that segment for you here and then enjoy the rest of the show. In the meantime, when you're ready to prepare with more certified organic lab-tested food, long-term storable food, like freeze-dried fruits, those are usually missing in storable food. We've got it at healthrangerstore.com, plus iodine and preparedness supplies and high nutrient density superfoods and like chlorella, spirulina. We've got turmeric and various supplements based on turmeric and lots of things, lots of amazing meals and recipes like powder mixes to make amazing things like a golden milk with ginger and turmeric in it. It's great stuff. So check it all out, healthrangerstore.com, and enjoy the rest of the show.
Now, Russia, China, and 27 other countries have officially established the World Organization for Cooperation in Artificial Intelligence. A ceremony was held in Shanghai, where the host nation's foreign minister and Russia's digital development minister signed off on the deal. With AI a huge talking point right now, Moscow and Beijing are working hand in hand to shape the new global organization. It seeks to put human interests first, ensuring equal access to, quote, information, transparency, and clear ethical standards. To turn such principles into reality, China is tasked with supplying breakthrough models while Russia ensures real-life application. Next year, Russia will host landmark international AI conferences in which China and many other nations will actively participate. Well, it's great to welcome live onto the program founder of the Anti-Censorship Hub, Brighteon Platforms, Mike Adams, live from Texas. Mike, I appreciate your time, sir. What kind of goals can an organization like this achieve that perhaps a single country wouldn't be able to tackle?
Well, this is a really critical positive development for the future of humanity, in my opinion. And of course, I'm an AI developer as well. And I understand also as an American that the American empire will weaponize and monopolize AI against humanity if it's given an opportunity to do so. And so this international competition, this balancing against Western AI hegemony, I think is really critical for humanity. China has extraordinary engineering capabilities, as well as Russia, and yet the United States continues to punish and use tariffs and artificial scarcity, deprivation of access to supply chains, in order to try to weaken those countries and other countries' capability to access machine cognition. That is unfair, and in my opinion, it's also a violation of fundamental human rights that the United States is doing that. So this development is very positive.
This is one as well of the first international organizations for AI cooperation to be officially formed. It's also spearheaded by BRICS members, countries of the Global South. But does that come with a challenge as well, Mike? Will the grouping have in balancing the participation of countries who've got, I suppose, different levels of tech development? How will that all marry together?
Well, that's a very good point. It's critical that the leaders in, for example, open source AI models such as China maintain an open source posture that helps share their developments and publish science papers that can be shared with other countries, such as Russia or even such as Iran, where there are very, very capable people who can augment and cross-pollinate those ideas for very rapid development. And if the BRICS nations succeed at this, there's no question in my mind, and I say this even as an American, that the BRICS nations will surpass America's AI capabilities in short order, including in semiconductor manufacturing, and they will bypass the tariffs and sanctions that have been placed against China, for example, restricting China's access to UV lithography equipment such as ASML. So again, this is overall a positive development for humanity.
Mike, just a final point about Silicon Valley's supremacy and perhaps looking on at this. Will they be looking on very closely at how this unfolds, this organization?
Well, yeah, absolutely. There will be efforts to sabotage this. And
I should also point out that even right now, the just recent news that some of the top engineers from the DeepMind sector of Google have left Google, saying that they disagree with Google's licensing of its AI technology to the Pentagon for weaponization and the production of automated, essentially targeting and killing machines. So what the United States needs to be concerned about, in my opinion, is not simply the international competition, but also the backlash from within, because the AI community in America has many people that completely disagree with the current trajectory of how this technology is being applied as weapon systems against human beings.
Really, really interesting analysis. Thank you for your time, Mike. Brightian Platforms Media Ecosystem founder, Mr. Mike Adams, live on the program.
Thank you.
I put out a post on social media that went viral talking about how if the infrastructure that supports the current world population contracts or is destroyed or shut down, then of course the world population cannot continue to be supported. Now, that seems almost obvious, and yet there's a lot of resistance to that idea. And so I wanted to explain this in a different way, using the example of deer corn and deer. Maybe that's because I see a lot of deer on my ranch, and there's a lot of baby deer this year, little Bambis running around, because it's a pretty good year to have a fawn. So the baby deer seem to be doing great, plenty of food, water, etc. But I don't put out food for deer. Now, some people do. Some people go buy what's called deer corn, which is always GMO corn, by the way. And they put out deer corn to attract the deer. And there are two reasons why people do this. Number one is people who love the deer and they just want to see them a lot. So they put out deer corn to attract them. And then the second reason is hunters that use deer corn to get the deer trained on coming to the feeding area so that the hunter can then later in the fall, they get a hunting license, then they can shoot and kill one of the deer or a couple deer, whatever they have on their license, after tricking them to come eat, you know, which seems pretty cruel to me. I'm not sure you can really call it hunting if you're sitting on your ass and you've trained deer for 6 months to come eat corn and you're just shooting them while they're eating. If that's called sport hunting, where's the sport? And anyway, that makes no sense to me. I don't kill animals. So the first group of people, they'll put out deer corn because they want to see the deer. Now, the more deer corn you set out, especially consistently over time, not only will you attract more deer, but then those deer will be able to have more babies because you're giving them the calories that they need to have the fertility and get pregnant and, you know, grow their babies. If you put that corn out, you're going to get more deer over time. That's why conservationists typically will tell people, don't put out deer corn. This is why I don't put out deer corn, because I don't want to train a whole lot of deer to be entirely dependent on me. Because what if I can't get deer corn one day, or, you know, or what if I leave or I'm on vacation or something? And then what are they going to do? Then they're going to starve. So I don't give food to deer. What I do is I work to create a natural habitat that's deer friendly, and thus I have a lot of deer that don't depend on me. That's, I think, actually the ethical way to do this. But anyway, a lot of people put out deer corn. Now, if you put out enough deer corn to, let's say, support 100 deer, then eventually the population of deer is going to grow to 100. And maybe that's your cutoff. You're putting out, I don't know what that is, you know, a couple of large bags a day or something. You can support 100 deer. So the population of deer will come into equilibrium with the infrastructure of food that you have provided. And as long as that food continues, the deer will continue, roughly the same size as a population. Now, what happens if you decide to cut that in half one day? Instead of two bags of deer corn, you only put out one bag, and you just do that suddenly. to the point where there's really only enough food for 50 deer. What happens to the 100 deer? Well, obviously, that begins the great deer famine. So there's a food shortage, and the deer begin to starve. And as they're starving, they have fewer babies, obviously. And so population starts to go down, and some of them may die from starvation, and some of them may migrate out of there looking for food somewhere else. So like the deer corn has run out here. Let's see if there's some other place that has more food. So they'll leave. So it's probably not surprising that over time, the number of deer that are living there will reach equilibrium with the food that's available, which is now enough food for 50 deer, but not 100 deer. That's what's critical to understand. So the same thing, of course, is true, obviously, with planet Earth and human civilization. If you build an infrastructure that supports 8 billion people by feeding them with fertilizer that's produced from the natural gas and produced from the sulfuric acid and the phosphate rock and so on, a lot of which used to come out of the Persian Gulf and sail through the Strait of Hormuz. So obviously, if you build an infrastructure that can feed 8 billion people, you're going to get 8 billion people because people will reproduce. If you then destroy a quarter of that infrastructure or take it offline for a period of time, which is exactly what has happened, then you're going to lose 2 billion people. The population will come into equilibrium with the available food resources. Just like the deer will obviously reduce its population to match the available deer corn. So where are we in human civilization on planet Earth right now? We are at about a 25% reduction in the availability of fertilizer. Actually, it's more than 25%, but we'll start there. So in other words, unless things are restored, that is, if we have over 100 commercial ships per day sailing through the Strait of Hormuz, which we have not had since the end of February, you know, we're 5 months into this now. Unless that is restored, then the world's population will contract until it reaches equilibrium with the available food infrastructure. It's just straight cause and effect. But it's actually worse than that because it's more than 30% of the world's fertilizer comes out of the Strait of Hormuz. And on top of that, there's a significant portion of the world's energy, especially diesel fuel, which is used in food transportation, that is running out. And of course, diesel's used in farming. Tractors run on diesel, etc. And the trucks that move the food run on diesel. And of course, food packaging is made from the polypropylene that's a derivative of naphtha, which comes out of the lighter distillates of oil, and so on and so forth. Food is actually encompassed about four or five different ways when you're looking at this current situation in the Persian Gulf. So food will become more than, we'll have more than a 25% reduction in global food if we stay on this current course, this trajectory of escalation. And it gets extremely bad if Trump makes good on his current promise to begin bombing Iran's energy infrastructure. The retaliation from that will almost certainly include Iran bombing the energy infrastructure of Qatar and the UAE and Bahrain and Kuwait, etc. And specifically, if Qatar's gas facilities are further destroyed, remember they're already partially destroyed, but if they are further destroyed, then the repair time stretches out to a decade to bring all that gas back online, the gas that produces nitrogenous fertilizers, the gas that has helium as a byproduct, the gas that provides the affordable energy for aluminum smelting, the gas that powers industry all over the world, etc. Now, of course, Qatar is not the only place where there's natural gas. There's gas, obviously, in the U.S. The U.S. is an exporter of natural gas. Europe has access to gas, but they've shut down their gas fields because, of course, Well, it's Europe, and they love to commit energy suicide. So, you know, there are other places to get gas, but not enough, not quickly enough. The thing is, you have to have food for humanity every few days. In fact, most people eat daily. I eat daily. I mean, I can go days without eating. I'm not looking to do that, except, you know, maybe on a fasting vacation or something, which I'm not planning on anytime soon. So most people eat food every day. You can survive without food for, you know, a couple of weeks. People tend to get very barbaric after, you know, 72 hours without food, as they say. 9 meals away from anarchy. Yeah, there's a lot of truth to that. So here's the thing. If you lose the infrastructure that provides the fertilizer that grows the food, you know, some people will say, well, but we can rebuild it. Yeah, but you can't rebuild it in 72 hours. It's more like 72 months, you know, or longer. This is going to take years to rebuild. Years. That's well known, openly admitted. Once you understand how natural gas is purified and liquefied, you would know that the facilities will take a decade to restore. I mean, just the concentrators that are used in that process, the I forgot what they're called exactly, they liquefy the gas. Those parts are only made by one company in the world. That company, I think it's in Pennsylvania, and that company can only produce so much, and it's not much. And that's why it has taken decades to build this infrastructure that currently feeds the world. So you can spend decades building an infrastructure that can be destroyed in one day because of war. And that is the risk of where we're at right now. One day could take all of this offline, way more than 25%. It could be 50%. We could lose 4 billion people. Now that's a worst case scenario. I certainly hope it doesn't go there. And that's not even the most likely scenario, but it is highly likely that we could lose 1 billion or 2 billion. Now, where would those populations be lost? Well, mostly in marginalized nations, you know, Southeast Asia, certain parts of the Middle East, certain parts, obviously, sub-Saharan Africa, certain countries, you know, but there would be food scarcity everywhere. Everywhere. Even in North America, even in so-called wealthy nations, food would become incredibly scarce. And there would be cannibalism. People would eat each other, and people would eat, you know, the zoo animals, dumpster diving, etc. Not a pretty scenario. So that's the explanation here with using deer corn. You take away the infrastructure, the existing population will contract to reach equilibrium with the available infrastructure. Period. That's irrefutable. No intelligent person can argue against that simple fact. Now, yeah, you can return to non-agricultural input farming, which, of course, is what many people will do to survive. You can go back to using animal poop and bird poop. There are entire islands that were covered with bird poop that were just completely gutted by the United Kingdom back in the day as the earlier forms of fertilizer. That was before the Haber-Bosch process. I think that was in the 19th century, actually. But that's gone. And yeah, you can return to animal poop. And if you do that, you can support only about 4 billion people. Because that method of farming just doesn't have the caloric output of the current method using, you know, phosphate fertilizers and nitrogen fertilizers that come from these energy-dense sources in the Middle East, just to be clear. So, yeah. Now, if this happens, can you survive this by being one of the 4 billion people that's left alive? And I would say the answer is probably yes. Yeah, actually, you can. You know, if we lose half the world's population, which is one of the outcomes, we still have the other half. And who is that other half? Well, that's the half of people who know how to grow food and who have some land and who maybe have some animals and who are more self-sufficient. It's not the half that live in the cities that are dependent on everything, that get, you know, that live on processed junk food and take a lot of prescription pharmaceuticals and trust the government to give them everything. That half, not going to do very well. So don't be in that half. Now, of course, a final thought here. If you want storable food, that can help you get through this, but alone, it's not enough. However, if you want it, of course, my online store has it, healthrangerstore.com, certified organic, ultra clean, lab tested food packs. They're called Ranger buckets. We have mega buckets, mini buckets. We have freeze dried organic fruits sealed in number 10 steel cans for long term, really long term shelf stable storage. I mean, many years. And then we've got Ranger buckets that are a combination of grains and legumes and rice and quinoa and sometimes nuts and things like that that will also help keep you alive. But ultimately, you're going to have to grow your own food or raise your own cattle or some combination of that in order to make it through this. And that's where this is all headed. You know, Trump is destroying the world's infrastructure that keeps 8 billion people alive. So if you love the idea of 4 billion people starving to death, then you love what Trump is doing right now. And some people do love that. Some people think that's awesome. I don't know. But if you are someone who wants to end human suffering and you have compassion for other people around the world, you don't want to take away half the world's food infrastructure just overnight. And that's exactly what is happening. Or I should say, we are moving in that direction. Not there yet, but that's the direction in which things are moving, and it's not going to be pretty. So finally, we have a lot of food right now in our warehouse, healthrangerstore.com, because I specifically ordered a massive amount of food in March. We got most of the raw materials in. We've been manufacturing since then. We've put it on the shelves over the last, let's say, 45 days or so. We are ready for a global famine. We're as ready as we can be. We've stocked all the square footage that we have. It's like, I don't know, 50,000 square feet of pallet rack space with forklifts and, you know, pallets, you know, stacked like three or four pallets high on the rack shelves. We are stocked, okay? And I did that on purpose. I went out on a limb, actually, financially, to do that. I said to my staff, like, I know what's coming. I have high confidence that we're going to get into a food scarcity situation, and we need to be able to serve a lot of people and a large number of customers. And the only way that we can do that is if we, you know, stock up on a lot of food. So I said, let's go ahead and do that, and then we'll have plenty of food when the panic comes, and we'll be able to help a lot of people get squared away. And so that's where we are right now. The panic hasn't yet begun because most Americans are still oblivious to what has already happened. They don't know what's coming. I don't know. They're paying attention to sports or fashion or music videos or whatever. They won't know until the day that the food that they normally buy is not there or it's doubled in price or something. So they won't know. They won't prepare. They will panic. The best time to buy food is pre-panic. And also, all of our food has been grown before nuclear war. So we are selling pre-fallout food. Whereas if this thing goes to a nuclear war, then all that food after that's going to be post-fallout food, which will have less value because of the risk of, you know, radiation, obviously. So we are offering right now lab-tested, certified organic, ethically sourced, ultra clean, expertly formulated, no garbage, no GMOs, none of that stuff. Pre-fallout food right now, healthrangerstore.com, with as much as you want to buy. That is a temporary situation. I don't know. It probably won't even last to the end of this year, I would imagine. So it's a temporary situation. Take advantage of it if you want, if you need it, while you can. And also, in the meantime, learn how to grow as much of your own food as you can, because that will be an invaluable skill in the months and years ahead. So thank you for listening. Mike Adams here. You can catch more of my videos at brightvideos.com and my articles at naturalnews.com. All right, take care.
So this is very heartbreaking. This is a story of the system being weaponized against families and people's rights being taken away right here in America, where we're supposed to have a Bill of Rights and a Constitution and due process and the 14th Amendment and all of that. Instead, armed men can show up at your door and take you away and diagnose you as being demented and throw you in essentially an elderly prison.
The system has been weaponized against my mother. That was a competent Texas cattle rancher. They turned around and they took her, and I haven't seen her since.
Okay.
They came out guns a-blazing because they came full-blown ready to kill.
Welcome to today's interview here on brightvideos.com. And I'm sad to tell you, this is a heartbreaking interview with some individuals who claim that officials in the state of Texas have kidnapped, well, one of our guests says that the state of Texas kidnapped his mother, and he's going to lay out this case that law enforcement was involved and also some other family members, kidnapped his mother, medical kidnapping, and forced her into a dementia center, even though she does not have dementia and has relatively good cognition and is fully capable of taking care of herself. Now, we're joined by three people today. So let me introduce them for you. We have Brian Cunningham first joining us. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on the show. It's your mother that we are going to be talking about. And then we are also joined by T and Peter Hogan, who is the couple you see there on the screen. And T and Peter are case advocates in defense of Brian Cunningham here. So welcome, T and Peter, also.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Well, thank you all for joining me. And pardon my, I'm stumbling a little bit because we are just now talking, and I don't know all the facts of this case yet, which is actually a good situation because I want you to explain it to me and my audience, and I will ask questions as I think our audience would ask. So who wants to begin?
Well, I'll begin. I'll give a brief overview.
Okay.
Yeah, well, a lot of this started because my brother's, Brent Cunningham, my mother found out that she couldn't trust him, and he actually financed some property that she inherited to buy out our uncle. And so she found that out. She found out some other things that he had done where he actually signed her name on some things that she didn't give permission to do. And so she voided the trust. Actually, the trust that he was successor trustee, actually both trusts, another trust that I was successor trustee of, and then it created, in the same instance, created two new trusts with the same name, reestablished those trusts, changed the governance of those trusts, and actually had what you would call new medical power attorneys that were medical and financial agreements, private agreements. They were notarized. They were held in a private trust. That was notarized. We did everything by that. And then we actually notified him and all the beneficiaries. You know, he was stayed as a beneficiary along with my younger brother, Brandon.
Look, I'm sorry to interrupt here, but
yeah,
this is getting into some very detailed legal areas, and we really can't do that. I'm not an attorney. Our audience is not attorneys. Okay. You're making allegations against family members. I don't have them on as guests, so they can't defend themselves.
Okay.
So
okay.
I don't want to look at that part of the story.
Okay, I apologize.
Okay, no worries. I want this to be factual and fair and accurate.
Okay.
And okay. I understand the state was involved in some way, but I don't want to get into a family feud. That's not what this show is about.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, if I could jump in.
Please, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to make this very, very clear. So what we're really talking about here, again, is gets into court sanctioned elder kidnapping. This gets into fraudulent conservatorships and estate and theft and systematic exploitation schemes. Okay. So this is really gets into your corrupt insiders. okay, of government-sanctioned kidnapping, of medical kidnapping. So this is including lawyers, judges, private guardians is what we're talking about, okay? I want this to be the people to understand that, again, the American people out there, I want them to understand this is kind of like an April park scheme out of Nevada. It was a well-known guardianship. It was a fraudulent guardianship apparatus, but it was many, many, many other seniors that were medically kidnapped. So this is what we're talking about. This is a weaponized court system that declares seniors incapacitated when they're not. Okay, and that's what this is. Okay. So Patricia Louise Locke does not have dementia. So this gets into also eminent domain type of seizures of land also, and basically it's into probate courts where they're basically completely stealing the trusts, putting the lawyers on as the lawyers, and also the judges are involved, and they're just completely kidnapping eradicating the entire, the state is completely depleted is what happens. So there's numerous cases. We even have a Weston case. This is a pattern of practice that also joins the same lawyers like Ellen Pearson Stewart and Ann Adams. So I'm going to, Brian, why don't you go from there and explain that?
But let me ask a question here, because I need you to provide some evidence of what you're saying. I mean, I'm very open. Yep. I mean, we know that state officials are extremely corrupt. We know that medical kidnapping takes place. Usually it's children, but also elderly, right?
Correct.
But do you have a medical analysis written from a doctor or a medical team that shows that Patricia is of sound mind?
Yeah,
we actually do. We T here actually was helpful in making this happen back last November. So there is an independent medical evaluation, and it is in the public record out on my Substack, and you can put that out to your folks. And I do want to go right to what you just said, because we all know about the children. I know your audience knows about child protective services. We call it child predator services.
Right.
This is the exact same apparatus. But now when you go to the elderly, you say, why are they going to elderly? Because they own a lot of property. And this is going to the land that Patricia, that has already been stolen. And now with everything that's going on, with Texas water rights and the aquifer and the AI data centers, this is really getting interesting. Because now, again, we're not prepared to show you these facts today, but we're getting into, again, this is government-sponsored kidnapping and trafficking. Okay. This is not new.
Right.
This is nothing new. I completely agree with you. This is not new. A couple of things. Let me give out your website here. So your Substack, which is peter70x7.substack.com, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Yep. And we're showing that on the screen right now.
Now scroll down, scroll down one frame and keep going right to there, right there. So right here, that doctor's orders defied by Windsor Nursing. That is the entire discourse of the independent doctor that came in. She received permission to release all the medical information to get this out. So there's been full permission of this. So if you keep going down, just scroll on down. Keep going right here. That's Ann's piece. But here we go right there where you've got the redacted pages.
Yes.
This is a series of stuff. It's a long read. It's not for now.
Okay.
But it concludes with a scathing letter by the doctor stating that this woman, Patricia, is competent. I've assessed her.
Process later, articulation of thoughts demonstrated no deficit.
Yeah. These are the receipts.
Okay.
And then on Ann Vandersteel, who got involved, thank God for Ann to do this, but she got it out there. She got an interview in with her partner, Maureen Steele, to directly have a conversation with Patricia, because she has a cell phone. And it's all you got to do. This is the most important thing for any of us, for the evidence you need, is just to hear her talk. And when you hear her talk, you're like, this woman doesn't have dementia, and we shouldn't need another shred of evidence, because that's what this whole thing is built on.
Right.
Okay, great. Thank you for that information. This is helping me. And Brian, I'm not trying to be
rude
at all. I'm just trying to
help
our audience establish this.
I appreciate that.
Can I ask Peter and T, just so that I understand your backgrounds, is it medicine? Is it law? Is it something else? Sort of where are you coming from as being advocates
for Brian and his mother here?
I could hardly hear him.
So the question is, who are we? How do we know about this?
And, okay, and what's your background?
So I was brought into this. Again, I normally work on CPS cases. Again, I work in different teams with Ann and other legal advocates. And I'm also somebody who actually was brought into this like 17 years ago. I've had my own case. It's how I, of government-sponsored sanctioned kidnapping. I actually my case was one of these cases that coined that. And anyway, I ended up being raised up in this as my executive administrator, the Save on Soul Task Force Coalition. Yeah. So I've been working in this for a long, long time as an advocate.
Are you an attorney? Yeah. Or do you have legal background or investigative? Are you an investigator?
There's 250 cases, Mike, down in South Texas. Okay, and I can't get into logistics on that because that's case sensitive. But this case, because of the area or those cases connected in Travis County, this is one of the counties, okay, that was connected into Brian Cunningham's case. Okay, so I was brought in due to that fact. And on that case, I was working other cases is what happened. Now, Brian, why don't you go from there and get into the logistics of also on the land, on the trusts, the court sanctioned, all of the corruption. That's what the public needs to know that. Okay.
Yeah, that sounds good. And Brian,
that's important. Collar crimes is what this is called. That's what it is.
Brian, let me ask you, I don't think T is able to hear me that well, but is her background law?
Yeah, it's hard to hear.
It's hard to hear.
No, she's not a lawyer, Mike. And what I'm going to say, she is the mother of Jonah Reef, a very famous trafficking case out of Southern California.
Okay.
It went through the highest levels of government. And it's through hard knocks and experience of last 17 years is why we're here, because we understand the apparatus. So we're about prevention, about helping people not get caught in these traps. But when they are, we're trying to help them get out of them too. And that's why we're here.
Got it.
Right.
Okay.
But I'm also an advocate. I work a lot of other cases in circles with Ann Vandersteel as well. She's also an advocate besides a journalist and investigator. And I've been doing that for many, many years.
Well, you seem very bright, T, very sharp, very well informed. I'm looking forward to speaking with you more in this interview. But yeah, back to Brian. So, sorry about that little tangent there about.
I'm trying
to provide context, but go ahead. Continue where we need to go with this.
Yeah, it just ended up happening. It just started as a family thing, and state actors got involved. And I'm not going to go there. What it is my mother actually is a Texas cattle rancher, competent Texas cattle rancher. And she actually has in Caldwell County, she's got a property that was in her trust, 50 acres in that in Caldwell County, and another property that actually has right of easements. It's 97 acres on that as well. That property has high voltage power lines, a lot of easements through it. There's a lot of commercial things that are going on in that area, which is
pipelines, maybe pipeline easements.
Pipelines, yep. We got natural gas, got crude oil. That's actually in the Highway 21, 183 area.
Okay.
And so that's where that property is. She also owns some property in in Travis County. She actually is part owner. It was her 50% that she had with her brother inherited. And that property is part of an LLC. That property is 3 acres that's actually under contract for like $8 million. So there's a lot of assets here. There's property up in Lakewood Estates in up in Travis County as well. And so what has happened is through other types of lawfare that there's been evictions. There's been taking over her property, the 50 acres, the 97 acres, and actually the 3 acres in Travis County. And that's where the state has gotten involved with state actors, and that's where we're at.
Okay.
And so, yeah.
All right. Thank you for that background. So, and again, I apologize. I'm starting from scratch on this. You're having to re-explain it all to me, but my audience needs that as well because we don't have any understanding of the case yet. But the burning question I have is, why wasn't there a judge that was able to see this medical examination that you have and was able to say this person should not be deemed incompetent? Is that because of corruption of the judiciary?
Well, that was actually done afterwards to try to get somebody that was actually a private doctor to actually do an eval on her. You know, when she went from her house on December 10th at the front gate to an actual emergency room, St. David's emergency room, and then to a vacation, to a hotel for 3 days in three different vacation rentals before they put her in this place. So she was put into this place. She has people there at that facility that actually they talk about that she doesn't belong there. They actually ask her how much medication does she need. She tells them she's insulin dependent diabetic. She tells them how much she needs. There was recordings of her talking about these situations. So it's like she's been put away. I can't even go and visit her. And she's been put into this place. She's been debanked, taken off trust accounts. She's had credit cards paid off and closed down without her permission. And she's just been totally debanked and financially shut off. And then her property taken away.
So she no longer legally owns her own life because of a court decision giving guardianship of her to one or two of your brothers? Is that a good summary?
Well, what has happened is that she actually went from temporary guardianship of one brother to actually another entity care for. So okay. these people are guarding the person, and there's another court appointed person for the estate. And so she's been just put into this place. She's been there since February 20, 2025. We take food to her every 2 weeks, can't go into the building, take prescriptions to her. And she's isolated. She's let out to walk into a fenced-in area, which you'll hear about on Ann Vandersteel's post.
What do you mean you can't go into the building? What do you mean?
They won't let me in the building.
You can deliver food, but you can't go in and deliver it to her?
That's right. You have to drop it off at the front door, drop off her medications to her. My wife does it as well and can't go in. But my brothers that she doesn't want to see are able to go in there.
So surely you are attempting to get a judge to nullify the previous decision in some way? Go ahead.
Well, it's interesting. I can't really go into all the details of that, but we have done, and it's public record, but have gone through the court system and court systems in the higher ups, and we're being denied everything. We're being denied everything, and that she's just sitting there. So we're getting no relief from anybody above the county court.
Who ordered the constables to medically kidnap her, take her out of her home?
Well,
was that a court order?
Yeah, what happened is she had an order, didn't receive it, had a writ of habeas corpus in September 26, 2024. And they came to the door. I was there because my mom asked me to be at the farm because she was concerned about my brothers. Not going down that rabbit trail, but they came to the door and they told her, one of the constables told her that, you know, you either come with me or I'm going to handcuff you. And they took her to an actual psychiatric evaluation and then brought her back afterwards. So if she was incapacitated or she couldn't take care of herself, then why did they bring her back?
Do you have the results of that psychiatric evaluation, a report?
Do not have it. The county will not let me have it. They said it's sealed. They won't let me have that and other ones that she's done that where they're at.
And so that's why Caldwell County?
This is Caldwell County, correct.
Okay, and that's right outside of Austin, is that correct?
That's south of Austin, off south of 183.
Okay, correct. Got it. Okay, so what are you trying to achieve now?
Well, we're trying to get this into the public and let people know what's going on because, you know, Netflix did Dirty Money. It was about guardianship. There's all these things about guardianship and that where it's like, from what I'm told, a $32 billion industry or $1 million industry. And what's happening is what we're seeing is, you know, if you have the right people and you can go in and get guardianship on anybody. And unfortunately, the system has been weaponized against my mother. That was a competent Texas cattle rancher. And like I said before, when we came in December the 10th, before we got to the property, we stopped at the gate, which is inside the property line. The same constable that came, one of the deputies that came in September, came and told her, you missed your appointment. Well, she had gone to her endocrinologist appointment, and they turned around and they took her, and I haven't seen her since.
Okay. Okay. So this is very heartbreaking. And I want to say I myself and my audience, we really feel for what you're dealing with. So thank you for being willing to come on and answer my questions. Mm-hmm. Back to T and Peter. So now I understand much better what you were saying up front, that this is a story of the system being weaponized against families and people's rights being taken away right here in America, where we're supposed to have a Bill of Rights and a Constitution and due process and the 14th Amendment and all of that. Instead, armed men can show up at your door and take you away and diagnose you as being demented and throw you in essentially an elderly prison. Does that sound about right?
Yeah. Yeah. And Mike, I know this will resonate with you big time when you see the pictures of the raid that was done on as an eviction. They came out guns a-blazing. The only person that could have been there at the time was Brian, and he was smart enough not to be there because they came full-blown ready to kill. And I know those are strong words, but we've already consulted with others and said there's zero justification. That was an illegal act to bring such force. And Brian was smart enough to get cameras up, and he surprised them that we actually caught all that footage. And that, again, is out in the Substack. And when you see that, I know it will resonate with you because it's just so criminal. It's hard for people to get their minds wrapped around how corrupt the judiciary is.
Well, and walk me through. I can show that video right now. Where do I find that on your Substack?
It's not. It's just still shot. So if you go back to where you were before,
yeah,
let me see where you're at.
Yeah.
And I can't see it right now.
Oh, okay. Then I have a story about the doctor's orders.
Yeah, go down. Actually, go out. Go back out of that. Go back to the, and then go to, I think it's May 5th. Where's the picture?
There it is.
Yeah, right May there. 5th. Bottom
okay,
right.
Here
that
it is.
One. Yeah,
got
right
it.
There. Yeah. And then just screen down to the pictures. This is what happened.
Oh my God.
And this is what.
Rifles. Oh, wait. Is that a.
Yep. I'd like to interject for a second.
Please,
so
go ahead.
I've sat on this case with others, like, and I can't get into this honestly because there is others that are federal people that are looking at, you know, and you go over state lines, you can look at people, you can look at going after things federally. It's another state's bread and butter, let's just say that. So we sat with an individual that's an investigator, pretty high level. And again, to, you know, maybe take on this type of ring, it's a ring, okay? This is a ring of government-sponsored bad actors. This is a raid, it's an unlawful raid, okay, is what that's called. Let's call it what it is, okay? That's really important for the viewers to understand. You can't, they can't do things like that. I mean, this is not, not normal.
And I'm just gonna name them off again because we wanna understand what the ring is. The ring is the judges, it's the court coordinators.
Right.
It is the court reporters. And man, you should see how corrupt these reporters are. Brian's got a story. And you know, the lawyers, of course the lawyers playing both sides. And we're gonna come back to that because we have evidence of one particular lawyer in this case playing the other side. And then you've got, of course, your law enforcement and your sheriffs. You've got your politicians and their puppet masters, you've got public and social servants, you've got the healthcare providers, you got the bankers and private equity, and of course, in the centerpiece of all this is the guardianship administrator. Every single one of them I just mentioned is involved in this case and other cases that we're bringing.
Well, we
care
know
for is who we have to be able to showcase here.
Okay, let me just ask this question, though. What is being extracted from the situation that benefits some of those actors that you just mentioned? Is there some property being sold and money funneled? Is there some property that was in the way of some project? You know, what's the, quote, win for all those actors that you just mentioned? Because they wouldn't do this if there wasn't a reason. I mean,
Brian, do you want to kind of go? Yeah, Brian, do you want to kind of hit in on the things that we're continuing to research and find more on?
Well, you know, the thing is first of all, you know, it's real property. So you have the real property. I mentioned the numbers on that as well. I mean, my mom herself, probably altogether, probably over $10 million that. What the real concern, too, is the 97 acres. You know, you've got all these easements. There was an eminent domain case that was proceeding on that. That eminent domain case went forward. And the same judge is involved with that, involved with other things as well.
Eminent domain for what? For building what?
We don't know. They, what they did is they came in. What happened is they came in and I don't want to go into the family squabble thing, but the thing is, they came in and they wanted to put a pipeline in. Okay. And what happened is they made an offer. Okay. That offer was to be accepted, but my brother turned around and wanted more money and didn't listen to my mom and kept pursuing it. And then an eminent domain came into effect with that. So that was how a lot of this got started, was because of that.
Okay. And can I mention that, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but I have information. I know that area that you mentioned, you said 21 and 183 kind of correct. Southeast of Austin, right?
Correct.
That is prime real estate for data centers right now. I am aware of projects of data centers that are going in right there. Well, I see the fiber optics going in.
Well, and I hear too.
Yeah.
Well, I see that. I mean, let's just paint the scenario. Okay. So, I'm just going to tell you. So here you got power lines for LCRA for Austin Power that go right through the property on an elevated place. You've got Texas Oil has got an easement there. You've got another gas line. Atlas Energy was in there. And Kinder Morgan was the other one that was doing that. That's all public record. Okay. These are all these easements. But you also have, there's a property that's on the south edge of that border, a water treatment plant going in there. It's going in right now, right off of Highway 21. So there's a water treatment plant there. And then if you look over there, then you have and then the west corridor of that property is Flint Hills Resources. So Flint Hills has a docking station right there, and through that property is an oversized pipe for water going to the water treatment plant.
Okay, wait, let me interrupt you here again. And again, I apologize, but I also have information on this. So the water, the industrial wastewater from SpaceX, which is north of where you're talking about, is being diverted through a large pipeline to the water treatment facility in Bastrop.
And
that facility sits right on the Colorado River, right? So they're taking the industrial waste from SpaceX, which will be manufacturing satellites and Starlink and whatever else, and they're treating that, they're processing that through a brand new processing facility in Bastrop County that's going to release that into the river after it's treated. The pipelines are going in. I see those pipelines. They're large. They're like 12-inch pipes that are going in along Highway 71. So when you mention wastewater treatment, I start to think about data centers, manufacturing, SpaceX, Tesla, that kind of, does that ring a bell?
Right.
Well, yeah. And then you got the toll. The toll is not that far away from there. So you have 18, you got 183, you got 21, you got the 130 tolls right there, the 45, and the toll goes around Austin. And then the one thing I didn't mention to you is there's actually some oversized pond, we'll call it, a tank, we call it. It's probably about an acre and a half that we built. So that's there. But then what's interesting about it is the discharge water goes right into the property. Right now, as we speak, from the water treatment place, and those are the headwaters of all creeks, Cedar Creek. That's the headwaters. That property's right there, which you know where that goes.
That
goes right into Cedar Creek and right into Colorado, right down to where you're at.
Right, which empties into the Gulf, Okay.
There's more and more. I mean, one of the attorney firms in here, I fell out of my chair 2 days ago. It was something that Ann was echoing in the state of Florida about donors for AI data centers. And I'm not going to specify their name right now, but there's one in there that has given $100,000 that is directly involved out of their Austin office here in this case, in the evictions of these lands. It's the same attorney firm.
Right. And it also cross-pollinates also with another case that's actually connected with CareFor, I want you to know, and it's the Weston case, the Graham Weston case, the Elizabeth Weston case, the Glenn Weston case, who's also held also in a facility also connected with CareFor and against his wills or desires. Okay, so this is important because that his company and what his holdings also connect to Space Force as well.
Hang on, I want Mike to get this.
Did you say Space Force?
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of, when you hear this, you're going to start saying,
this
can go anywhere.
Yeah.
So again, you got Graham Weston, who owns New Braunfels. This is a co-founder of the company Rackspace, Mike. And they sold it. He sold it for $4.3 billion. He's the darling of San Antonio in the new skyline. He's involved. He has his son, Glenn Weston, put into the same guardianship at the age of 24. Glenn is 29 right now, and they are injecting him. They are trying to take him out. This kid cannot see the light of day. He's got too much on his father. This is high profile. Right. This is the case which blows all of this wide open. And, and one more point, because in this case, there's an attorney here. I'm just a specifier. I have the receipts in my Substack. Ellen Pearson Stewart, she represents CareForce, and she's the one that fired back a letter at the independent medical evaluation of that doctor. When Elizabeth Weston got a hold of that, she says, oh my God, this same Elizabeth Pearson represented me for my son against CareForce. We have the receipts on both sides. Okay. This is how it's done. They play the both sides. This is always how it's done.
You've got a pattern of practice.
Okay, so let me restate the overarching theory that I think we're all talking about here, but correct me if I'm wrong, and Brian, please chime in here. So the overarching theory is that there are elderly people in Texas, and probably, you know, this happens many other places, who have critical pieces of property that may be needed for right-of-way, maybe power grid infrastructure, water treatment infrastructure, gas, I mean, who knows, right? Some kind of infrastructure that, for whatever reason, they are not wanting to sell that land, but powerful interests want the land, and then there's an effort to conspire, possibly with the help of some of the family members of that person, to get that person declared incompetent, get them out of the way, and then take over the property. Is that kind of the overarching theory here? with the corruption of the judges and every, you know, law enforcement.
Right. Can I interject? This is exactly what it is. It's called the mechanics of abuse. Okay. And this goes back to the silver collar crimes in elder abuse. And this goes into a structured pattern designed to strip victims of their autonomy and their assets. This is what this is.
Okay.
So it's a predatory petitions. This is unscrupulous attorneys. These are opportunists who file guardianship and conservatorship petitions, often exploiting the fabricated claims of diminished capacity, like I mentioned before. In this situation, there is no diminished capacity. So those are false claims. Those go into false police reports, even false claims completely. This goes into court secrecy and sanctions. Judges sometimes compromise an inadequacy of inadequately overseeing cases, rubber stamp the appointment of private guardians and attorneys, effectively locking families out of their decision making. Okay, so I want people to understand that they put them in isolation, and this is called it's medical kidnapping. So victims are removed from their homes, placed in restrictive facilities, isolated
and
at
fed
home
garbage
or
too.
In
they're,
these facilities
fed
like
yes.
for
okay
so
they have
for Windsor over. Medicated while perpetrators take control of their medical and financial decisions.
Yep.
They liquidate. This is a liquidation of assets also once in control.
And I absolutely understand the fact that people in these facilities are fed total garbage and they put on medications, like you said. Yep. So then that makes them appear more incompetent because of the side effects of the medications.
Bingo.
Brian, expound on that. Brian, expound on exactly that, what has happened to your mother and how she's been able to defend herself.
And that it's a pending guardianship. It's not valid. That's very important.
Okay.
To specify.
Yeah, we actually had retrieved documentation from the actual guardian of the estate in one of the evictions where the guardian of the estate was claiming he was successor trustee of a trust I was part of. Long story short, he said, of a guardianship appointed pending in Caldwell County. That was his affidavit that he actually filed into a case. And so that's what's gone on. And my mom, as you know, she knows her rights. She is refusing to contract with these people in the facility. And she actually, all the CNAs, they're like, oh, well, you know, you're bodying better than we do. And they'll ask her, how much insulin do you need? And she'll tell them, well, you know, I need 2 units or I need this much or I need that much. And that's what's been going on. Okay. She's found stuff floating in her milk is what she's told me. You know, we talk all the time. We talked every morning. And she's a real firecracker. I mean, she's definitely knows what she's doing.
Now, your website if people want to help support your legal fees, is freepatricialock.com. Is that correct?
Yes. That's what I have a redirect to a GIMP Syngo I set up. I was trying to get a website going as well. Just haven't been able to put that together yet.
All right. So here's a picture of your mother. She looks very joyous.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the Thanksgiving. I'm sorry to interrupt. That was the Thanksgiving before they took her. That was the last Thanksgiving we had. And that was Thanksgiving of 2024.
All right. So freepatricialock.com. And lock is just spelled L-O-C-K.
Correct.
Just
that's
to be
correct.
Clear. So are you engaging attorneys now? What's your game plan?
Well, that's what we're trying to find. We want to find an attorney that will help us out, that would actually help us in the federal side, because the state is not helping. There's no relief at all. Oh, wow. They're not helping us at all. Like I said, I've been, you know, up to the Supreme Court with some cases as well. We've got some stuff, legal stuff going on right now in the standpoint of Court of Appeals. And so I can't really get into that information, but I've been trying to fight for my mom. I mean, she's got, you know, she just needs help. And the whole system, like I said, has been weaponized, and I'm trying to find a link so we can get that link so you can, as I'm looking, to post if you want to play her talking.
Just my God-given rights and my free will. Well, actually, the people at this institution know that I'm completely competent. They let me go outside every day, and I exercise for an hour and a half outside. I walk and do some sit-down exercises. And if it's raining and it's been too cold sometimes, I walk in this building. That's every day that I do that. So I know that it's very important to keep our body in shape.
What is happening to Patricia Louise Locke should terrify this nation. Patricia is a 75-year-old grandmother, ranch owner, widow, and lifelong Texas cattlewoman now being held inside a locked dementia wing despite recorded evidence showing competency, cognition, awareness, and independence.
They're amazed how well I can take care of the amount of insulin I need for each meal that I have to take, because I'm insulin dependent. And I instruct them on how much I need, because I know what I'm going to eat and I know how I'm going to exercise.
During a recorded interview with Maureen Steele of American Made Action, Patricia knew her full name, date of birth, medical history, property details, the names of people involved in her case, and explained in detail how she was removed from her ranch and confined under guardianship. Court documents show guardianship authority moving over Patricia's person and estate. Orders were entered. A mental examination was authorized. A system began moving around her life, her property, and her freedom. She described being threatened with handcuffs by constables. She described being moved between hospitals, hotels, and vacation rentals. And she described being separated from family while two of her sons allegedly attempt to seize control of her estate.
In fact, the day that Brenda came to visit me, he told me that if I didn't agree to it, that I could just rot here.
Patricia says the people caring for her knows she does not belong there.
Even the people here have even told me, you're not incompetent. Yeah,
right.
You don't belong here.
Then there is this financial trail, credit card changes, account updates, replacement cards, identity theft warnings, trust accounts, refund checks, and banking records. Patricia says she did not authorize many of these actions. This is no longer just a private family dispute. This is about whether guardianship in America can be weaponized against competent citizens. This is about whether an elderly American can lose her freedom, her property, her voice, and her rights, despite evidence she remains fully aware and capable. Patricia says she still manages her diabetes herself. She changes her own bedding. She monitors dangerous medication mistakes. She exercises daily. And yet, she remains confined.
Just my God-given rights and my free will. Being able to go to church and go to the lake and go visit friends and have nothing here.
If this can happen to Patricia Louise Locke, it can happen to your mother, your father, your grandmother, your family. This story is still developing. American-Made Action and Steel News will continue investigating the documents, the guardianship filings, the financial trail, and the voices of those involved.
Well, I know one thing. I really have to watch my back. I have to watch everything that goes on here. And I think that my Lord Jesus the Christ, I'm able to do that because I see so much here. And I don't want to talk about it because I don't want to be accountable for what I see, even though it's so wrong.
Stay tuned, because Patricia Louise Locke's story is far from over.
Go ahead.
Yeah, they'll be able to hear her. They'll be able to hear her in the very beginning of it.
Okay.
Because it was done audio. It wasn't ex post. Like I said, about 4 minutes and 52 seconds. And I would just encourage, you know, your listeners that they would just even, you know, not even give any money, but just get that video out.
Okay.
Get that video out. Get that video out to John Rich. I mean, John Rich just got appointed to special envoys to help ranchers and agriculture people that are getting their land taken away. I mean, my mom was a cattle rancher. I mean, we're talking farm exemption land. I mean, she qualifies for that. Get it to Trump. Get it to people that will help out. Because this is, you know, when a nation goes after the young and goes after the old, I mean, we're a banana republic when you cannot defend the little ones or you can't defend the elderly. I mean, what kind of people would do that to elderly people?
Yeah, but
to kids.
What makes this more complex, though, and I know I mentioned I didn't want to get into the family side of this, but that definitely makes it more complex because your brothers, as you allege, are a part of this. And so the state is one party of several that are involved in this, correct?
Well, let me briefly touch on that. Okay, my brother got temporary guardianship for 60 days. After that, was full on the state. So,
State has guardianship?
Well, I will say she's considered a ward of the state, but that's what they classify her, ward of the state. You have, you actually have an attorney as an actual guardian of the person, and you have care or the estate, and then you have this entity called CareFor that's guardian of the person. Okay, so you have that going on. So, but the problem is when he applied, I want to mention this one thing. When he applied, he said he had a valid power of attorney. He knew that the trust was voided. That's all I want to state.
I see.
About that. So that's why earlier I was going through that. Just letting you know, and it'll go down the legal route.
But well, this is
that's key about this.
Yeah, I mean, we need an attorney to join the show because I don't have a legal background either, and this gets very complicated, right? But from a health perspective, I do have a strong background, and I know that when a person like this is basically held prisoner inside a building when they used to be out doing cattle ranching type of things, that lack of normal sunlight, that lack of nature, the lack of the outdoors will contribute to cognitive decline. So they can kind of create what they say the condition was to begin with. Maybe they fake it until they make it. You see what I mean?
Oh, I see. I hear you loud and clear. And that's why the only way that she can get out is she gets access outside. They let her out of the locked hall that she's in. They let her outside. It's fenced in and she walks every day. I mean, you know, Mike, I would love to get you on the phone call with her one time. You would be impressed with her because she, you know, she actually loves to take care of herself. You know, 46 years, insulin dependent, diabetic, has all her limbs, all her toes, you know, and she takes care of herself.
Well, maybe she needs to pull a Houdini you know, and free herself from her imprisonment. But imagine being a fugitive from justice in the state of Texas just to free yourself from being falsely imprisoned. But go ahead. Was it Peter?
Exactly. And that you're exactly right. And that this is such an imminent situation. I always wanted to leave it that oh well, you know, she's in there and we're still trying to get her out. Her life is up in the air right now. Right. They are shaking her insulin bottle. They're trying to put bubbles in it. They've just locked her window that she can't even open it 3 inches where nobody else is like that. Why did they do that? They are trying to take her out. She's chemically sensitive and they're using solvents in the room. They are trying to upend her any way they can to get her to take on symptoms of dementia.
Yeah.
And so this is why I'm just saying, men in Texas, just show up there. This is now Ryan Mata. He did Never in America. He featured the baby Cyrus story. That's the CPS case where baby was taken out of mom's arms in a gas station. Baby was taken to hospital. And then they were trying to say, baby's not here. Ammon Bundy is the one who got word of what was going on. And he just put the APB out saying, people, men, we just need to show up at the facility peacefully with our cameras. If we go to Seguin right now and we start putting cameras in the face of the people that work there, those people, and we're going to say, hey, what's your name? Are you a part of this too? That's going to put such internal consternation. This is what will get her out. That's what got baby Cyrus out. And as you know, Mike, CPS stories normally never end well. But that one did because people showed up and they made it very uncomfortable for the people inside the institution. Uh-huh. As Brian already said earlier, that there's people in there already right now saying, you don't belong in here. I don't know why you're here. You can take care of yourself. Those people, if you're hearing this, stop it and come forward and expose these people. This is crazy. Right. You're complicit by saying nothing.
So right. It sounds like you need to organize a peaceful vigil.
These things are done on, sorry, Mike, are done on ex parte orders. Those are unlawful and illegal. So again, getting in on the advocacy side. So when you get into creating a guardianship through fraudulent ways, so in the paperwork, and again, it speaks for itself that Brian, the petitions that he has filed, the mandate that he has filed. So those are things that get into the evidentiary evidence that he has. Okay. He has the receipts to show that this was done unlawfully and illegally. Okay. So that's what I want your viewers to understand. And so any lawyers that want to take this on, we have that evidence. Okay. Thank you.
Well, okay. So number one, what about, have you contacted Brian Festa at We the Patriots USA?
Anything you can do to amplify it to everybody and everybody.
That's the help we need.
Okay. Right. So right there, let me make that introduction because this is exactly this is the kind of case that we, the Patriots, would take on, I believe.
Yes. There's many of these people. There's many that don't have a voice, that like Patricia and like Glenn Weston. So there is a pattern of practice. This is a ring. I want people to understand there is other victims out there. So if people would come together and unite, we need people to come forward and stand and help. Okay.
All right.
Brian, is this your,
I take
it, Brian.
Mike, are you still, I think we,
yes, go
mom,
ahead,
are you there?
It's your mom.
Yeah, mom, are you there?
I'm here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, here's mom. Here's mom. She called me just now. Mike,
hello,
this is my
Patricia.
Mom, Patricia.
Hello.
Hello. Hi.
Tell us. We're doing an interview on your behalf here with your son. Talk to us.
Okay. Okay. The system is definitely weaponized. The two sons against me, you know, it's really upsetting to me what they've done to me. I mean, actually, they're trying to take all my property and, of course, all my rights away. And I've had, you know, the property for 47 years, and I've ranched for that many years. So, of course, my first husband did some of the ranching, but after my married second husband, he just told me, you take over the cows if you want them. And I've been doing it for a period of 47 years on that same property.
Wow.
And
I admire
it's
that.
Just big. Well, thank you. And Brian has just helped me so much by doing all of it. And in fact, the vet even told us, I don't know of anybody else that I help out or service the animals, but take better care than y'all do, you know, because Brian's just really up on it. You know, it's just something we've done together for years.
Patricia, let me ask you a question. I live on a ranch in Texas also. I rescue animals like donkeys and things, but you must be very good at repairing broken barbed wire, because I noticed that I have to do a lot of that. Can you tell us about some barbed wire repair?
Well, actually, Brian does a barbed wire. I kind of assist. I'm just there to go for things. But there's a really unique way that a lot of people do it, where they kind of braid the wire back together. I've seen one of the sons do that. But I actually don't get into doing it. I think I did maybe twice when it was desperate. But that's the only time I ever did it.
Well, what kinds of tasks did you do on the ranch? What kinds of things did you do?
We would feed the cattle, and we'd put out hay, and he was a big hay buggy, and then he would dump it, and I would he would cut the wires, and I would pull the strings, rather, and put them in a plastic bag, and then after that, they would always check the cattle, too, you know, and make sure everything was there, make sure that nothing looked sick or something that we'd have to take care of.
Absolutely.
And you know, helping with, you know, giving them shots and getting the syringes ready for that. And we would ear tag the cattle, you know, so we know which calves belong to, you know, which mama, you know.
Well, so, you sound like a hands-on gal. And that's
right.
We're pulling for you here. And I'm sorry to interrupt, but we're almost out of time here. But Patricia, anything else you'd like to say as we wrap this up?
Could you tell what happened when they took you to Windsor, Mom? What they said to you?
Oh yeah, I can tell you that. I just lady named Ann Adams. Ann Adams was there. She's just there. And she told me, said, someone came in and she said, I was upset because she lied to me four times before she took me here. And she went down to the hall and she says, this is what you get for not participating. And I'm in a lockdown facility. I cannot, you know, get out other than in the backyard, which is fenced in and locked. And I work out every day for about an hour and a half. And then I come in and stay in this bed for the remaining days, because I will not go out and participate with any of the people that's in the hall, because I'm not one of them.
Yeah.
And I just, my freedom is just in this room reading my Bible and praying, watching the TV. That's what my whole day is.
All right, Patricia, we're praying for you, and we're pulling for you. Thank you for taking the time to talk with me. And your son and your friends here are also working on your behalf. I have to wrap this up. I have another interview in 2 minutes here. So, Brian, any final thoughts here?
No, I just appreciate your time. And I just, if we could get this interview out and get this out there so we can make this public so other people don't have to go through what we have.
Okay, we will do that. We will do that. We'll get it out. And T and Peter, but T especially, I'm very impressed with your knowledge and your advocacy. And thank you for taking the time to join us today. And obviously, we need to do a follow-up here. This is just an introduction, but I want to thank all four of you. For your time today. We'll get this out and then we'll keep in touch about where this goes next. And if you're going to do a peaceful vigil,
let us help
spread the word. If you're going to do a vigil or whatever is necessary to bring attention to this, we'll be part of that. I regret that I have to go. I wish I didn't, because this is really important, but I just want to say God bless all of you. And
thank you
for joining me today. And we'll talk again soon.
Thank you very much.
Blessings to you. Thank you.
Thanks. All right.
Answer to prayer. Thank you, Mike.
Well, there you go, folks. Obviously a very important story, a human story that we will continue to pursue. Had to cut off the time here because of scheduling, but we'll bring you more on this story as it develops, and we pray for the best outcome for Patricia and Brian and everyone involved here. So thank you for watching today. I'm Mike Adams here of brightvideos.com. You can also find updates on this story at naturalnews.com. Take care.
Mother Nature provides many botanicals for good health. That's why we're offering you 5 liquid extracts and tinctures that are non-GMO, certified organic, and lab tested for glyphosate, heavy metals, and microbiology. Only at healthrangerstore.com.